Oh man, you should probably edit that with some real spookiness.
No, it's perfect how it is. Welcome to PCMC. This is Lightning Strike Halloween 2023. I'm here with gnarly Nadia Cater.
I'm so glad you didn't say naughty, because that's what people usually go for. And I'm
I
like,
almost said it, but that's not
this
Halloween-y enough. It's gnarly.
that's no, that's more like softcore porn.
Yeah.
It's not the
Gnarly.
tone.
Gnarly Nadia, how are you?
Spooky, how are you?
This
Are we gonna
episode,
stop doing this?
no. This episode, you're listening to this episode. If you're listening to it the day it came out, this is Wednesday, October 11th. That means in 2 days, it'll be Friday, October 13th. So this is the perfect film for today.
Oh yeah, that line's did you plan that?
Yes.
Smart, very smart.
Thanks.
Yes.
So this year's Halloween theme is slashix.
Nice.
So last week, you heard me and my brother and confidant Anthony discussing Halloween from 1978. One of the, I'd say one of the, I'd call it the first slasher, and I would call Peeping Tom and Psycho more like progenitors.
Proto.
Yeah, proto. But before we get into Friday the 13th, I want to know your feelings on slashers, Nadia.
Slashers are a lot of fun. I think you kind of have to suspend your belief a little bit, and we might talk about that later, of just how kind of ridiculous they can get.
Sure.
But I always have fun.
Yeah. You know, in the I grew up with a lot of the mainstream slashers that we're talking about this month, like the Nightmare on Elm Street and the Halloween movies and the Jason movies and the Texas Chainsaw movies, although those don't aren't really great after the first one. Actually, the second one's awesome. But that's it. Lately in my life, I find myself filling in the gaps with like a lot of these random little slashers that I never watched, like Slumber Party Massacre or Prom Night or Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Nice.
Have you watched any of those like one-off slashers? Because there really was a ton of them in the 80s. It was so popular.
Oh man. I might have, but I can't really think off the ch top of my head. Oh
Have
yeah.
you seen Slumber Party Massacre?
It's one of those movies where I've seen so many clips from it, I can't
Yeah.
tell if I actually watched it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I have to watch it to see if I actually watched it.
Well, do you have a favorite slasher or slash
I just like them. I mean, I guess I would say Nightmare on Elm Street because Freddy is such a fun character.
Yeah.
And I also feel like, well, I mean, I don't want to get too into it, but I felt like Friday the 13th is just the characters were so generic. And at least in A Nightmare on Elm Street, there's some semblance of personality, but not much.
Right,
But I mean, I'll be honest. When I watched this movie twice this week, and I can't remember any of the characters' names. They all just seem like guy one, guy two, like
I know what you mean.
different shades of white people are just like that was what.
Yeah, I mean, so I did watch these films as a kid. Although I was also very scared as a kid, you know, I had a very like love-hate relationship with horror. Like I loved it in the daylight and was scared at night.
Yeah.
When you're talking about like the big three slashers, Freddy, Jason, and Michael Myers, Friday the 13th is the grimiest in a way because people consider Halloween like very good filmmaking. Like the first Halloween movie is like a real classic film. And A Nightmare on Elm Street is inventive and imaginative and surreal. But Friday the 13th is like, they're like the bottom in a way. But I do think that there's a lot of charm to the Friday the 13th movies. And it's a very weird series where they would come out every single year. And a lot of the same crew would stick with it, and it was constantly evolving and trying to create itself, like make itself into being. I mean, famously, people know that the first Friday the 13th doesn't have Jason Voorhees, the big monster of this franchise. It's not supernatural at all. It's a slasher movie where the slasher turns out to be what, late middle-aged woman, woman in
Yeah.
her 50s and 60s.
Wearing a cardigan. Yeah.
Yes. I've got a lot to say about that cardigan.
But okay, so you take it then, spoiler alert for a 40-year-old movie. So that sequence at the end
Yeah.
where Jason pops out of the water, is that a dream sequence then?
I think in my reading of it, yes. And I do think that that's what they were intending when they made the first movie. I think when they came to make the second movie, they were like, "Hey, what do we do?" And then they're like, "Oh, let's make the leap." Because if he was a little boy that was in the, like, how did he age 30 years between one and two? Like, it doesn't, it's, to me, it's just a good scare. It's a good, like, final, I
Oh,
had it
yeah.
on my list of one of my favorite jump scares.
Yes, I
It's a
remember.
jump scare. But no, yeah, I always read it. I read the first film as not being supernatural.
Yes, okay.
Do you agree?
I agree with you. It's just how specific it was just made me think, like, I don't know if it happened or not.
Sure.
Because her imagination,
Yeah.
if we're going to take it as her imagination, why did she imagine the boy?
Right. Also, I think it's important to understand that this movie, the director of this movie, Sean S. Cunningham, has always been very open about him trying to emulate Halloween and the unoriginality of it. He said Halloween was his big hit and I wanted to get into movies, so I said, let me do that. Let me pick another holiday. Let me do another. It's very clearly in many ways a copy, although in many ways I think unique and different. And where it lacks in the where it lacks in design, where it lacks in sophistication in terms of its composition and the way it looks, and I think it makes up for in the sort of go-go spontaneity of we're making a cheap movie fast. Like when you watch it, you can tell all of these are one take, right? Because actors will screw up their lines, things will be weird, something will fall in a really weird world. The kind of thing that another director would go, let's take it again. But they're not. You could tell they were like, all right, we got it, good, next setup. And so it's evolving. And to bring it back to what we were saying with the ending, supposedly the tale is that Tom Savini, the maestro of special effects and still today is like an icon in horror cinema, supposedly it was his idea to do the ending. He was like, it would be great if we had one more scare, and why don't we have the boy come out? So I don't think that the filmmakers were thinking or were asking themselves questions like, is this supernatural? Is it not supernatural? I don't think questions like that were in their head. I think it was like, we've got these teenagers in underwear, we've got cameras, we've got a camp. What are we? We've got Betsy Palmer, like an old movie star. She's here for like an afternoon. Let's just fucking go. Let's do it. Let's just fucking make what we make and see what we get. And I there's something I think charming about that.
I actually feel embarrassed that I didn't even realize that Friday the 13th was supposed to be just like a day, like Halloween. I didn't even put that together. Now that you said that, I'm like, oh my goodness, it's even more of a copy than I thought.
Oh yeah, it's
Just
very clearly it's that he's using the first person perspective of the killer, which we see in the opening of Halloween.
right,
Get more
yeah.
out of it in this movie because this movie is a whodunit, in a way.
Sorta. It's like a whodunit, but you're not given any characters.
Well, it's funny, when I was watching it, I was asking myself, how would I be reacting to this if I had never seen it before? And I was wondering, am I supposed to think that Crazy Carl is the killer?
Is that even possible, though?
I mean, why not? There's also a few times where people are absent and other people get killed, where you could red herring and be like, oh, it was that guy. I do think that to some small extent, they're trying to. I mean, I do think it's stupid that Betsy Palmer shows up in the end and she's clearly the, like, the second she steps on screen, you're like, oh, that's the killer. Like, how could it not be? Like, is there a person alive who didn't know that she was the killer the second she steps out of the car?
She was so weird
earlier. She should have been there in the beginning. Like, they should have set her up earlier as, like, this old woman who works at the camp. Like, why not do that?
I was wondering that, too. I was like, what was the point of this?
Probably because they have more time with her, honestly. But it would make more sense to do that.
It would, yeah. You know, it's funny because it's been years since I saw Halloween. Uh-huh. So I'd have to watch it again. But when I was watching this movie, I felt it was so derivative of Psycho.
Sure, yeah.
Like, so much of it felt like Psycho. And even having a mother, I mean, yes. In that sense, the mother in Psycho wasn't really the killer, but someone channeling the mother. It's more like the reverse. It's the mother yes. channeling the victim.
Yes, that's true. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's so true.
Because even the music and the...
Oh, the music is... The music is by Manfredini. What's his first name? Is it Harry or Henry? I think it's Harry Manfredini.
Manfredini, what a name.
Yeah. What the... I'm looking through my notes. Yeah, Harry Manfredini. I think the music is a combination of a ripoff of Psycho and a ripoff of Jaws.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Donna, Donna.
Yeah, and then instead it goes like slightly different beat. It's like, Dana, Dana, Dana. And it reminded me, you ever saw that clip of Vanilla Ice explaining how his song is different Under Pressure? He's like, so just to give, you know, like your listeners, just a recap. It's very briefly, it's Vanilla Ice going, well, you know what the difference is? It's my song is din, 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 din. Din, din, din. See, that ding makes it different.
Yeah.
Whereas Under Pressure by Queen is din, 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 din. I'm like, are you for real?
Yeah.
I was like, all right, go flip houses, dude. yeah, so...
And like Jaws, by the way, the music stands in, I think, for the killer sometimes. Because it's not Jason. The killer's often in first person or where you see the killer's hands. So at one instance, I think you see the killer's feet. So you don't know who the killer is. And it's kind of like that and the famous sound, the ch-cha,
ch-cha. Which is, that's all people remember. And that's what they use in all the movies, too. So it's like no one remembers this generic soundtrack.
Right, right. And but that's interesting, too, because it reminds me of... Well, you said you haven't seen Halloween in a while. When I watched Halloween, we talked about this last week. The thing that I forgot was how often you hear Michael Myers' breath. He has this very, he's very breathing heavy, which I read is like, he's like sexually getting off on killing people, which is very Psycho.
Oh, man.
Unless, when you see the killer's point of view, often you hear the cha-cha-cha. Which people say, people have different theories on to what it means. Some people say it's supposed to be kill her mommy, like kill her mommy. But I don't know if I hear an M sound. It's like like non-diegetic though, which is interesting. So it's like, so I guess like we're seeing through the killer's eyes and hearing in the killer's mind. Because they can't hear the killer's not actually going ch-cha-cha. So it's like, it's this acousmet, if you will. It's this, it's outside of the text.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, that was like one of the, you know, a few of the original interesting ideas that this movie has. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, someone's even murdered in a shower.
Sure, yes.
Oh, my God. So, like, I was like, come on, man. But, yeah, so I haven't seen this movie before watching it for the podcast. I actually really liked the... So the beginning, you know, it starts off with like a kind of like flashback to 1958, which I'm not sure where the first killing strikes, which makes you wonder is like, why didn't the beginning be the little boy drowning?
Right.
It's, and that's something this movie does that I'm like, I can't tell if it was they didn't have enough time or they were focusing on other things. It's like, they should have made you think it was Jason. Like, if...
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because you kind of... It's said as an afterthought.
Right. And there's a lot of things said. Like, you're told, oh, there was a drowning, and then a year later there were murders, and then there was a series of fires. You're just told that the camp is cursed or jinxed. And it makes me wonder, was Jason's mom setting fires? Like, was it all her? Like,
well, she was probably doing a shitty job because...
Yeah.
And I know it's because they didn't have enough money, but, like, everything on the set looked old. Like, in use.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's,
like
it's slimy looking. It looks dirty.
Yeah. It's a very...
summertime dirt.
It felt like an active camp that they got to run in and go film in the off season.
I disagree. To me, it feels like a camp that was active 10 years ago, and it's so in disrepair. It looks so grimy and gross.
Okay, that's fair.
I would not send my children there.
Well, there's even one point in some part of the movie, this isn't important to the plot, where the killer, I think it's the killer or the struggle, the final girl, someone falls in like a bunch of dirty old mattresses. And you're like, what on earth? I was like, if they're cleaning up this camp and...
My OCD, there's a part where they're in like a kitchen and there's like dirty, smudgy stains on the refrigerator that looks a million years old. My OCD, if I were them, I would not have died because my OCD would have been out of there immediately. I would have been, and they're smoking weed. If I smoked weed in that scenario, I'd be like, oh my God, there are snakes and dirt everywhere. Oh my God. Oh my God. I just stand in the center of the room.
You know what? Now you mention it did you notice that two of the women who were murdered were running around outside and in buildings barefoot?
In panties. Sure.
And one of the women that's murdered in the bathroom, not the shower, or maybe it was shower curtain girl. I don't remember these names, but there's like, she's in her panties at the mirror, like washing her hands. And you just see these two sponges that look like kitchen sponges. One's like on the sink and the other is an ledge above it. And they look so disgusting. And it just made me sick. And I was just like, you're barefoot in this bath, in a bathroom at a camp. Right.
And you know it's so not gross. Production design.
No.
You know that's a real gross sponge.
Yeah. Oh, and everything, even the food, they had some food, like non-perishables. At one point, one of the characters is going to make herself an instant coffee, and you're like, how old is this coffee?
I know. So disgusting. What, the one you were talking about, was that the one who does the Elizabeth Taylor impression in the mirror of the bathroom for some reason?
I think so. And you're like, what is going on?
That one's Marcia, I think.
Okay.
They're very like forgettable white people names. But yeah, I did write down their names today when I watched it again. I guess the big star of the movie is Kevin Bacon. This was like his first big thing.
Yeah, that's basically what I wrote, is like Kevin Bacon and a bunch of nondescript white people being murdered.
Kevin Bacon has one of the all-time iconic deaths, though, in a slasher movie.
That was good.
Did you see it coming? Or have you seen that clip elsewhere?
I've seen that clip before, so I kind of saw it come. But it also, the way they set it up, it seemed really obvious. It was either going to be he was going to get murdered in bed, or he was going to discover the body in the top bunk. The camera makes sure to show us another victim, which for some reason, and I don't know why, it's like a lot of these bodies go missing.
Yes.
And
it doesn't really make sense what she's doing. Like, why is she toying with some of them? It's like, did she just pick a final girl and go, you're going to be the final girl, so I'm going to fuck with you? Like, she should just be plowing through them.
And she looks like a woman in her late 50s, right? Yeah. At the very least. And I'm like, is this woman carrying around full body teenagers and dumping their bodies around? Like, what's your gym right? Like, you know, Mike, the last time we talked, you said you went to the gym once a week. Was Mrs. Voorhees working out every day and just hiding bulk under that sweater? Because she also throws a body through a window and you're like, what is your upper body strength?
It's like Laurie Metcalf in Scream 2. Like, really? Laurie Metcalf has got to be 110 pounds.
soaking wet.
yeah.
Okay, so actually, so, I kind of got off track, but one thing I said I did like about this movie that was different was after that flashback scene of the counselors having sex and then being murdered in 1958, the text of Friday the 13th kind of like zooms into the screen, and then you hear like a really bad sound effect of breaking glass. And I was like, this is fun.
Breaking glass, too.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
That was cool. That's a good setup to
and it's a good freeze frame on the girl who's being killed.
Yeah, that was fun.
Well, that's them going back to Halloween, because Halloween begins in the past with Michael Myers killing his sister. And think about like other slasher movies you might have seen. Like you saw Pieces, right?
Yeah.
That begins also with a flashback. Like a lot of these slashers, you can really see them through the sort of psychoanalytical lens of like the return of the repressed. It always begins with something in the past, some crime or some injustice, something terrible happened in the past that often involves children. And then now we are dealing with it in the present.
It always involves children in some way, whether it's that the killer had a traumatic experience as a child or something. And it does a lot of these slashers, excluding Freddy Krueger, really have, I mean, I guess technically, if he's, you know, implied to be a pedophile, it's a mental illness, but they all have mental illness too. It's never just someone killing for fun. It's always just some mental problems.
These movies are all, and Friday the 13th, I say, is also ableist, very much so, because Jason is, he is shown, when he is shown, he's shown as having physical deformity in his face. And there's a, when the mother is talking to the final girl, Alice, she almost says, I'm not sure what she's about to say, but she says, he was, and then she pauses. And then she goes, he was not a very good swimmer. So it's like she's about to say he was disabled or he was something. So yeah, it's there's a lot of ableism. There's a lot of sexual dysfunction too. It's interesting because like her whole thing, right, is that while she was the cook at the camp in the 50s and her son Jason went to the camp and two camp counselors that were supposed to be lifeguarding him were off fucking, so he died and no one could help him. And now she's taking it out on campers. It's interesting because
camp counselors.
Yes, camp counselors, right.
Because you never see any campers.
No, no. I think there's only one movie in the series where the camp's actually open and going. There's kids, but he still never kills any kids. It's weird. The psychosexual politics of the movie are in some ways more extreme than Halloween. Like in Halloween, it's implied that the killer is triggered by his older sister having sex in the beginning. But in this, the movie seems to see sex itself as like something horrible, that all bad things come from sex. So it's like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Is it the return of the repressed, or is it the sex isn't repressed, but after the sex happens, it's moralized? If that makes sense.
I think it's the latter. I also made a note that, so in my brain, and I didn't realize this until I watched it, was I always like associated this movie with the start of the trope that if you have sex, it's, you know, it's always heterosexual sex.
Yes, of course.
You're going to be the next victim, right?
Yes.
And that's why I thought it came from this movie for some reason. But then I was watching it, and like a lot of people that don't have sex,
yes,
are murdered. I was like, what are the rules here?
No, you're absolutely right, though, because of Jason's whole thing about his, because of Jason's backstory, that thing does come from this movie. But in fact, this movie's not a very good example of it, because Kevin Bacon and his girlfriend are the only ones that have sex. And they die after they have sex. Everyone else doesn't. I mean, it doesn't make sense that she go, like the final girl in this is a very stereotypical final girl. She's very similar to the character of Laurie Strode from Halloween, played by Jamie Lee Curtis. She's the motherly one. She's the not sexual one. She's the one who like has interest in some people, but her relationship seems to not really be going anywhere. She's the most conservatively dressed. She's the good girl. So, like, if Jason's mother is all about killing teenage, like, why would she kill her? Or, like, why would she kill the cook? Like, the first, they do a little psycho thing where they introduce us to this girl, Annie, in the beginning, who's, like, hitchhiking to the camp, and then she dies.
Yeah.
When she dies, she gets into the killer's car, and we see her from the killer's point of view, and she's saying how she loves children and how she, this is her dream come true to work at a camp with kids. So why would you kill that person if they seem so devoted to the well-being of children? It doesn't make sense, really.
No, it doesn't. That scene really bothered me too.
Why?
Because she was technically killed not at camp. It was on the way.
Right.
And also how weird everyone was. So how the movie starts off, it does make, like you said, it's you know, reminiscent of Psycho, where it makes you think this woman's the main character. And actually, that happens a lot, because there really isn't a main character in this, which is a weird feeling.
Right. It look, I think that it's interesting, but you could easily see this film as dull. Like, in between the kills, there's just a lot of just teenagers behaving, playing Monopoly and shit like that.
And going swimming. Like, it's very mundane. And but it's like, and also having really hokey lines. Like, it's like, no one's ever really said that. But yeah, so the cook was killed outside of the camp and also given a ride. So that,
yes.
But what bothered me about it was so the movie starts with this young woman who's like, looks like she's hitchhiking. She goes to a diner and she's asking for directions, and everyone is so uncomfortable and awkward. And then that crazy guy is warning her about Camp Blood.
Yes, Carl, sure.
Yeah, crazy Carl.
A harbinger.
He is the harbinger, but she seems to not take any of that as a red flag, which is the weirdest part. She was just like, oh, well, I guess I got 20 miles to go. And then someone gives her a ride halfway, and that's where the killer gets. So she technically dies like 10 miles or so from camp.
Right. The geography of the whole movie doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, Crazy Carl tells her, he wants her in town, and then Crazy Carl gets on a bike, and then she hitchhikes with two different hitchhikers towards the camp. But then Crazy Carl ends up in the camp. Like, how'd he get there?
I guess he's just riding around for like 20 miles.
On what road? Wouldn't we have seen him? Anyway, but again, those are like, pulling on those threads is easy yet pointless.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But yeah, so I was also a little confused about how old, like, we say teens, and that is the trope, and because we're talking about the trope, but were they actually teens? I could not tell. And it's not just because the actors looked older, and this was also filmed in like 1979, right? So people, you know, young people looked different back then, but it seemed like the final girl, there was this insinuation that she was a bit dating. Older, right?
Yeah, she's a bit older.
A bit older, and she also seemed to be dating or dated or something, the guy that bought the camp, who clearly looked like he was in his 30s. So I was like, how old is everybody?
Yeah. The weird backstory between him and her is interesting. And he's like looking at her art, and he's like, oh, this is beautiful art. And he sees a picture of himself. And he's like, is this what I, she was like, yeah, I drew it last night. And he goes, is this what I look like? And she goes, that's what you look like last night. And then he's like, can you give me one more chance? And she's like, okay, like there's stuff going on. But I also think she has a crush on the other boy, Bill or whatever, right? The kid in the red coat, who's like, not Kevin Bacon and not the annoying funny one.
Funny is a stretch, but yeah, not the obnoxious guy. The guy with the feathery hair.
Yeah. Well, this movie contains all of the character archetypes that appear in later slasher movies to a greater extreme. Like, there's always, like, the funny guy who's not good with the ladies, but is overly horny. And then the sexy girl, the sweet girl, the motherly girl, the bully, the guy who's, like, tough and a bully. Like, they're all there, but it's not as extreme as it'll be in later examples of the genre.
Yeah.
But the funny guy, or the weird funny guy, is a big part of these movies. Like, There's like a, I think it's two or no, I think two has like this fat funny guy, and his whole thing is like, I'm fat and have curly hair, and no one wants to fuck me, and it's insufferable. And then I think in one of them, Crispin Glover is the weird funny guy.
Oh, I think every movie is on Max right now. That's where I watched it.
Yes, the first one. Watch them all. Take a journey. It's weird. Yeah. You and I saw one in a drive-in.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that we saw six. So it's like I never watched the Friday the 13th, then watched six, and then years later, now I'm watching one.
So what was it like watching one after watching six? Because six is one of the best ones, but it's so different from one.
Well, I think in six there is a little bit of fantasy in it, in that like it seems like Jason had like powers or something.
He's in a grave, and then he gets hit by lightning and comes back to life like Frankenstein.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, what a weird series.
It's interesting in that it's a series that doesn't really hinge on, other than having, except for the first movie, like, the same killer. It's really... And it takes place at a camp. It's just, there's not a ton of consistency.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, in this movie, people die in so many different ways. When does Jason stick to the machete? Because that's what he's known for, is the hockey mask and the machete.
I think two or three. Because he doesn't even, he appears in two, but he's wearing
like a sack or something?
Yeah, like a night that the town that dreaded sundown kind of sack. He doesn't get the hockey mask until three. And in two, he's much more like, even though it's supernatural, it's kind of not supernatural at the same time, because he seems like a real person. Whereas by the end, he's just a superhero zombie. He's unkillable.
Right. So, which, I mean, that kind of is what happens in Halloween, right?
Yes. Yes. They all go that route, but that's what I find. That's why I think it's so interesting to go back and look at the first one and try to not think of the rest of the series. That's what we did with Halloween. Because, you know, I don't think a sequel can ruin its original, but I think your cultural consciousness can be thinking about the entirety of a franchise and not a singular film. You know, like if you think of this as just a singular film, it's a different thing from what it is then thought of as later.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There are two interesting moments with the kids earlier on in the film, and I want to know what your take was.
Okay.
One is the snake thing. There's a snake in Alice, the final girl's cabin, and you can tell it's a real snake, and it goes under her bed, and then she calls in the others, and they try to help her get it, and then somebody takes a machete and kills it. I think they really killed that snake. That seems like that snake really died on film.
I think it would have been cheaper to use a real snake and kill it.
Yeah.
Than it would be. I think the way it moved, it made me think it was.
But I think, and again, maybe I'm reading more into things than I'm reading more than is on the surface, but there's a disquieting moment after the snake. They're all like in a frenzy because there's a snake and it's scary. But then one guy kills the snake and they're all kind of quiet for a moment. And I found that really interesting. Like, it's like they're confronted with death in a weird way. Did you notice that at all, or were you nodding to sleep?
I wondered if it was supposed to be a whodunit kind of, oh, well, that guy's really good with a machete.
He must have killed.
But then the rest of the movie doesn't really do that. And everyone's killed in such different ways, then it doesn't make sense.
Right. Somebody gets an axe in the face. Somebody gets an arrow through the neck.
Sort. Well, it's not even, it's like technically right under the neck.
Yeah.
Like, that's Kevin Bacon's.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no Johnny Depp.
Clavicle? Whatever that is. That?
Yeah, clavicle.
Yeah.
It was cool. It's no Johnny Depp being sucked into a bed and then exploding into a blood whirlpool. But
right.
It was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, going back to that, we were talking about that before. I actually think it's a really cool death because I think you think that the killer's going to come from above him.
Yeah.
The way that it's framed and the way that we've been showed that there's a body on top of him, you think that the the scare is going to come from above, especially because blood drips down on him and he notices the blood. And then the hand comes up from under the bed and holds his head down. And the first time, again, I can't remember the first time I saw it. I was probably a kid. But not knowing that that's where that's going, I could see that being very shocking.
It was a good misdirection.
Yeah.
It's kind of like in Prom Night 2, where you think the woman's going to be decapitated, but then she's like thrown out a window.
Yeah, yes.
That was good. Yeah, so absolutely. That was a cool death. They killed that snake.
And then there's that other moment where Marcy is telling Kevin Bacon about it's beginning to rain, and she's telling Kevin Bacon about when she was a kid, she would have nightmares of it raining blood.
Oh, that was weird too.
It's weird because, look, you could see it as just filler. Like, they've got to have these kids saying something. But it's just, I don't know, it's an interesting little moment.
I honestly can't tell if a lot of this movie is filler, or was it like they were trying to go a certain route of mystery or death, and it just fell flat, you know? Because some moments really feel like it could be, like we talked about the snake, it could be some deeper meaning or something, and then it just doesn't go anywhere. And it doesn't quite get there. So you're kind of left in this weird lurch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And other than that scene, you don't really know anything about these people. So, like, even that line in itself is really interesting, but you don't know anything about these people. So it kind of just doesn't, it kind of falls flat almost. It's like, oh, we know something about a character. And then we don't learn much about her except, she may or may... Was she one of the people playing Strip Monopoly?
No, she's the one who dies with the axe. She's the one who fucks Kevin Bacon.
Got it. Okay, so, yeah. So then... Right, so then we don't learn anything about these characters.
Strip Monopoly is interesting because there's a sort of, I guess, the sexy girl, Brenda. She's like, let's play Strip Monopoly. And then you see them, like, taking... They know... Nobody... gets all the way, I don't think anyone gets all the way naked, or maybe you can know, you could see the nipples of Marcy, that's it. You don't see any, but it's funny, the sex and the violence are kind of tame considering where the genre went in terms of extremities. It's actually pretty tame when you look at it now.
Yes,
but what I thought was interesting about Brenda was she's like the sexy one. And then she, in the middle of pouring rain, she runs to her cabin barefoot in her underwear. I don't know why she didn't put her clothes back on before running to her cabin.
And putting on a poncho. Like, she took the time to put on a poncho over her underwear, but didn't put shoes on.
Right.
It was very, very odd. And also, if it was pouring like that, I feel like I would have just stayed in the main cabin.
Yeah. She was like, I left my window open. So I guess she wanted to go check in her cabin. I don't know. They had to split them up. But what I think is interesting is when she gets to her cabin, she puts on like a Victorian frock, and then she like lights a candle and reads a book. And it's like, it's so interesting. Like, you were just the sexy one. And she's really interesting because she's the one that she's lured to her death by the killer, like screaming for help, like a little child going, help me, help me.
Right. That seems needlessly cruel because it was like, well, if you're killing people, counselors, because they ignored your child's cry for help, now you're luring someone with the child's call.
Right.
Like, what's with that?
It doesn't make sense. You should kill them if they don't answer the call. It should be
that, like, would make more sense.
But I do like it. I mean, I like how creepy it is. And
yeah,
again, it's so different from what you get in this. In the sequels, it's very action oriented, you know, like this big monster is going to come and kill you. But in this, there's like more mystique there. I mean, luring her out like that, I think, is a really interesting idea.
I did like that. But it's also, you know, it goes back to the kind of, again, the inconsistency in how people are killed. Because why kill one person like that and not anyone else? If that's the point you're trying to make.
Right. No, you're right.
But it was real. I enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, come on. She can't think that. It's actually kind of funny because I was like, this sounds like a 50-year-old woman. Like, this doesn't sound like a real child.
What did you think of the cinematography later on in the night when it was raining?
I liked it. I like rainy scenes.
Yeah.
Though you can kind of see, like, it kind of, at one point it seemed like you could see there was a hose above them.
Sure. I liked how unlit it was. Like in some scenes, it's so dark, it looks like people just in a void.
Which I think, and then of course there is a scene where someone's murdered, with the lights on. Like there's all
Yes.
these like bright floodlights, so it's so dark. It's you
Oh,
can't really see.
yeah. They do that thing that I love when it's a mystery. They do this in Clue as well, where we're seeing through the eyes of the killer and we don't know who the killer is, but the victim recognizes the killer. So the victim walks up to the killer like, "Oh, hey, it's you. How are you?" And then they get killed. And they're like, "Oh, I was just about to say your name." Like he like recognizes her, like, "Oh, what are you doing up here?" And then gets murdered.
Yeah, but who recognized her?
Well, she worked for that guy, the older guy. He's not the owner of the camp. The camp is owned by the Christies, and she says she worked for the Christies. So I think he would know her.
Okay, so I'm so I actually I thought he was the owner, so I was
I
a little
did too.
confused.
For most of my life, I did too, until like I saw it last
But
night.
then
Realized he's not the owner.
no, but he's older and he has
The
that like,
boss.
yeah, the mustache.
We don't see the owners.
Okay.
They're referred to as the Christies.
Right. Do you ever see them in any of the movies?
No. There's
That's
really,
weird.
despite they were made every year with both basically the same people, there's very little continuity. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And also the camp and the lake were constantly being rescouted. So like it never looks the same. I do
Oh,
like the way the lake looks in this movie though.
it was, yeah, it was very picturesque. It's like if I could just be by this lake and not anywhere near this dirty ass camp,
Yeah.
that would be a really pleasant afternoon. So I actually made a note here because someone at some point mentioned, and I think it might have been the people in the diner in the beginning, that the new owner of the camp, sunk $25,000 in the camp to
Yes.
revive it. So I had to look this up because like this is a little specific and it seems like a lot. So I wrote 1978 because that's when I thought it was filmed, but whatever. 1978, the buying equivalent of 25K is $117,000.
Jesus.
So why would someone pay $117,000 to buy and repair a dirty old summer camp? Like how long would it take to make that money back?
And where did that money go? That camp looks like garbage.
I,
Where
yeah,
is
where
that
did
money? You think it's a money laundering scheme?
Absolutely. That's the only, actually, that would have been a great plot point in one of these movies.
Yeah.
Like mobsters being murdered by, like, you think it's like mob hits and it's
Yeah.
just Jason killing people.
Yeah.
yeah, so, okay.
Do you know that there's like a 7-hour documentary about the making of this entire franchise?
Yeah, did you see it?
I have. It's called Crystal Lake Memories. It's on like Shudder. It's the most specific. It's the most specific documentary ever. And so fucking long.
I remember when they premiered, when they were advertising that, it was like that and something else. And I can't remember what it was. It Halloween that also got like a 7-hour documentary treatment.
No, Friday. No, Nightmare on Elm Street did.
See, I would be more interested in seeing that, but 7 hours. What could you pause? You know, the cameraman in Friday the 13th Part 2 was wearing steel toe shoes when he dropped a paint can. It bounced off and hit the lead in the head.
What is
Like, what could you
exhaustive
possibly?
oral history? I always forget that after the last jump scare of the kid jumping on her in the lake, there's another scene in the hospital. What do you
Yes.
think of that scene?
Well, I think it was cementing. It was all a dream, or he's coming back. But then it's like if he's 11, they used to like what looked like a little boy, or at least someone who's small frame. And it's like if you're setting this up for a sequel, I'm not scared of someone who's 5 feet tall,
I don't think
4
they,
feet tall.
again, my reading is that they weren't. I like, see, I think, I kind of like that scene because everything's so white and everything in the movie has been such earth tones. The hottest color you see is yellow. Yellow appears a lot in the film. And then at the end, it's all white. It's like she's in heaven or something. It's like she's dead.
Yeah, it felt like a dream sequence in itself.
Right. And I guess going back to the yellow color, I think the powder blue cardigan that the killer wears really stands out compared to the rest of the color in the film, especially because it's so conservative and like the others are like the younger people are running around in underwear.
Yeah, that's a good catch.
Can we talk about why don't movies have real underwear anymore? Real underwear is so much more attractive than G-strings. It seems like when you see people in underwear in movies now, it's never like real cotton panties.
I mean, I'm guessing. I'm making this up right now. I think it's just the way, like, so in this movie that's very provocative, but now it's seen as tame. So it's like we have to go very provocative. So
I
that would
see
be
action.
either, yes, I either have to see ass cheeks or with a string, or you're completely naked, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, how? I mean, women wear G-strings, of course, and I guess men do too. Yeah, men do too. But I don't know. It just seems very for what we see people doing before they get murdered, it just seems very uncomfortable. Like the cotton panties look comfortable.
Sure, they do. There's a certain sense of realism to the cotton panties. It's like they're wearing real underwear. They're working at a camp.
Yeah, they wouldn't be wearing G-strings.
It's interesting, like even that, like clearly it's meant to be titillating, but even that becomes so much more extreme as the genre goes on. Like there's got to be so much TNA in these movies, and in this one, there's one love scene. And I'm gonna call it a love scene. The sex scene between Kevin Bacon and his girlfriend is not that graphic. It's almost romantic. It's not like she's not riding him with her boobies bouncing. Like it's very tame lovemaking. I think they both come, which is nice.
A lot of kissing.
Yeah. And then you've got like panties and stuff. Whereas like later on, it's like tons and tons of boobs. It just gets so, but that's the thing. I get the, that's as a genre grows, the expectations, the tropes and the expectations of the audience grow together. So it becomes the thing of like, so by the time you get to like Slumber Party Massacre, it's like, yeah, we've got to start with a scene in the shower where we just see everybody naked, or you know that amazing nude scene in Prom Night 2. What's up, Mary Lou? Or what's new, Mary Lou? Whatever the fuck that's called. Where she's completely naked, walking around killing people.
That was fantastic. You're
Yeah. A better film for sure.
It is. The more you think about it's way more fun. And oh man. And someone's electrocuted by computer. That's great.
Yeah.
1980s computer. one thing that confused me to take a step back. So there's a scene where two of the counselors are looking in a bed, or they pull the sheets back, and there's an axe, and you
Yeah.
are meant to assume that's the axe that killed the young woman in the bathroom, but there's no blood on it. The axe is laying on blood, but
Oh.
when they pick it up, you don't really see that much blood. I'm like, how did this go through a girl's face?
They also don't react appropriately freaked out. They're like, they kind of react like it's something weird. They're like, oh, what is this? It's like it's a blood, it's an axe on a bloody pillow. You should be screaming. But
Yeah,
that's
they seem
yeah.
nonchalant.
That's the weird thing, and this is the same thing happens in Halloween. When me and Anthony were talking about Halloween, I was saying that really the protagonist is not in a movie. Like she doesn't realize Michael Myers is there killing people until 15 minutes before the end. And this, it's like the last 30 minutes that the final girl like sees a dead body and knows that there's a killer. So it's weird narratively because you've got a protagonist, but you're not really following them do anything. Like she's like playing Monopoly and like making instant coffee. She's not in a movie until like the very end.
You know, the thing about that Monopoly game is like Monopoly takes like 10 hours to beat. So
Yeah.
how long were the and how did they strip? Like, what is it? Oh, you landed on my property, take off your pants.
Yeah,
Like,
she's yeah. She makes the look. No, she makes it very clear, Nadia. She says, instead of paying money for rent, you take off an article of clothing.
Oh, right.
I've never played, by the way, I've never played strip anything in my life. And I
Me
want.
Neither.
Have you ever gone to a camp?
No.
Me neither. I don't think I'd want to, honestly. I mean, as a kid, I was like, no thanks. I'm not outdoorsy.
I wasn't outdoorsy, but I was also like, it's funny that you mentioned like OCD is like, apparently I was very like that as a child. Like I was super anxious about being dirty or anything. And so I can't even imagine my parents dropping me off at a summer camp like this. I would be horrified and probably not sit down the whole week.
Yes.
Like it was so gross. Never been to a summer camp, never played strip anything. I've played Monopoly maybe twice in my life, and
I love Monopoly.
I hate Monopoly.
Oh, I love it. It brings out the capitalist in you. When you start to win, all of a sudden you become a capitalist. You're like, because the fun, what makes that game a perfect criticism of capitalism is the more you win, the easier it is for you to win.
Yeah.
So when you have money, it's easier to make money. But you begin to, like any good capitalist, think that you have earned it and it's not just a system that's built for you. It's brilliant.
Well, I mean, that's what it was meant to be.
Right. Yeah. It's meant to be a criticism of capitalism.
And that's not what happened. I just always found it the two or three times I played Monopoly at the end of it, even if I'm winning, I'm still irritable that I'm playing Monopoly. So it feels like a miserable experience. I was like, you know, now I'm an adult. I don't ever have to play this again. I'm grateful.
Let me ask you a question. Let me give you a little quiz. Not a quiz, but let me ask your thoughts here. Crazy Ralph is played by a guy named Walt Gourney. He appears in how many of these movies, do you think?
Oh, God. I have no idea. Like five?
He's in three. He's in part one, he's in part two, and then he shows back up in part seven.
Why?
I don't know.
To be the siren call of people who ignore him? Like,
but yeah, to be the harbinger. Yeah, he's always the same guy. He's always Ralph, the crazy guy. Which, by the way, at some point, he's not crazy. Right? He's no shit's going on. He's correct. You should listen to Ralph.
What I don't get is why do murders keep happening, but then people keep trying to make this camp happen? Like, you're going to keep losing money on this deal. I don't think kids actually show up there.
Yeah. Why would you send your children there? I guess it's the cheapest camp, probably. Like, camp.
And, well, I do wonder how would children get there? Because the nearest town, and it does seem like a literal, like, small town, is 20 miles away. How the hell, why would you drop your kids off in, like, the middle of nowhere?
You know, canonically, people say that this franchise takes place in New Jersey. But it's not said, at least in this first movie, that it's New Jersey.
No, they didn't mention it. I looked it up online. So I was like, oh, New Jersey.
Yeah.
No, because at one point, the cook, she mentioned, or not the cook, sorry. The final girl, I think she mentions that she has to go back to California at some point.
Right, so that's like, such a weird, yeah. Yeah, that's so true.
So you're like, so does that mean you live close or far? I don't understand. And then it's like, if she hitchhiked from New, which by the way, I'm still, every time I'm reminded that hitchhiking existed and it was a regular thing, I'm flabbergasted.
Yeah.
Like, that's like...
I know, right?
People would just wait, like, teenagers would wait on the side of a highway with their thumb out and then just get in any stranger's car to get somewhere. And when I said this, I was talking to my mother-in-law about it, and her friend... they're the same age. They're like in their 70s. And they were like, we used to hitchhike all the time. And she was like, yeah, one time we ran away from home at 12 and we hitchhiked like a mile from home. And I'm like, someone picked up two 12-year-olds and took them somewhere and just didn't think anything about it. Like, what was America before 1990?
It was
reality. Like, how are people not
crazy, dead? Right? I know. It's such a weird, it's so odd. So this has been a great episode. I'm sorry you didn't like it as much as I did.
Oh no, I Okay, I'm sorry if it sounded like I was being overly critical. Like, I actually, criticism is just an exercise for me. Like, I'm having fun talking about this.
I know. Well,
Like,
I feel bad because I'm going to be doing a Nightmare on Elm Street with someone else, and
well, I am mad about that
sorry. I
now.
tried to pick what I thought would be the best movies for the best people, and I failed with you. But tell, can
No,
you tell? Yeah.
sorry. I was just gonna say, like, I'm actually glad that you had, because I probably would not have watched this if you didn't ask me to. So I'm kind of glad that you did.
Now you've seen it.
Because I didn't really see it. So I just, yeah, sorry. I just wanted to say that this was fun. It was fun. I'm glad I got to watch it.
Well, let me ask you, what are you do you what are your spooky season plans? Do you have some movies you're gonna watch or some things you're gonna read? Like, 'cause to me, spooky season is all about curating media. You know, like to me, like Christmas is music, right? But Halloween is movies. And stories. So like to me, like spooky season is all about like basically creating a 2 month film festival for myself.
That's great. I want to watch some of that Roger Corman stuff. Like, that's gonna be online for a while. The Roger Corman, the Poe stuff, absolutely. And I do want to watch at least Friday the 13th 2 and 3, just to see how it evolves from 1 to 3, because I'm interested in that.
I think that in terms of fun, they get better. They get more fun.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
But,
Because they get dumber as well.
we didn't talk about how Mrs. Voorhees was killed.
Oh, yes. She's decapitated.
What's wild though is,
Yeah.
like, the final, they're on the beach, the final girl finds a machete and is
Sure.
running towards.
Oh, that's why he, that's right. That's why Jason uses a machete later. Because his mother's killed by one.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Because later
Well,
on, we see he keeps her head in like a shrine that he lives in. It's weird. You'll see.
Horrible. But yeah, so the final girl is running, and they play it in slow motion, and the music
Yeah.
gets louder, and she's just running towards Mrs. Voorhees, and Mrs. Voorhees looks scared,
Yes.
like, but for a little too long. You're like, kind of like, how long did it take this woman to run? Couldn't she, Mrs. Voorhees, have escaped by now? And
Right.
then, like, a one swipe, quick swipe, and her head kind of falls off, and her hands are up, and she's like clenching, like, her
Which
final
is great.
movement.
I know, like she's headless and her hands are like grasping at the air.
It's
And that's
so
Tom
good.
Savini's hands.
That makes sense.
You can see his hairy knuckles.
Yeah, it's really interesting because Tom Savini is, like that kind of like deity of, like, practical effects,
Yeah.
right? It's interesting to see his earlier work and then, like, moving on, because the effects in this movie are not great.
Yes. The Kevin Bacon kill, I think, is well done.
That is the best one, but
Interesting how they did it too, because like his head is really his head, but then like his neck becomes a fake neck and a fake body. So like he's underneath the bed really with his head out. It's I think that's well done, but no, he gets I'm Savini gets much better on as you know these things go. But also you have to think about budget and time too.
that too,
Watching
yeah. But and also, like, with his experience, as he became famous for this, he was given more money and more interesting projects,
yeah.
So you could see him grow as an artist, essentially. And that in itself is interesting. If you're not interested in Friday the 13th at all, if you're interested in special effects, I would say, like, in looking at Tom Savini, I would say, like, this is a good movie to just see where
Yeah.
he goes along. Yeah, I'm sorry. We kind of went off on a tangent, but what are you looking for in what are your spooky watches that you want to get into?
Well, there are things that I watch every year, right? That like me and Jen every year will watch Hocus Pocus.
Of course.
Sometimes we watch A Nightmare Before Christmas. We try to watch Casper. We always watch Over the Garden Wall.
That's such a good
Yeah.
fall, like, spooky. Do you watch any of the sequels of Casper or Hocus
No.
Pocus? Just the originals?
No,
Okay.
I've seen Hocus Pocus 2 is good. I don't know if it's going to be part of the tradition, But it came out last year and I liked it. And then like she doesn't like horror, so that's all me. So like, you know, sometimes I just like I'll just be like, okay, like, all right, I'm gonna go on Shudder and see what I feel. And typically I've heard of everything, so it becomes a thing of like, oh, is today the day I see this? You know? And you know, there's something so cozy about horror because there's something so cozy about genre because you know what you're gonna get from it, even if it's supposedly upsetting. And I kind of want to watch the Babysitter movies. There's two.
Oh,
those they were made for Netflix. I saw a clip because now Jenna Ortega is very popular, so I saw a clip of the second one because she's in the second one, and I was like, these look kind of interesting. And what else am I looking? I want to read more Poe. I have from a few years ago the complete works of Poe in like a huge volume, so cool. I try to take it out and read more. I like to read The Raven once a year. And, you know, I've got a book. There's actually a new Haunted Mansion novel, which I'm wondering if it's better or worse than the film, because it's a different story entirely. And it's written by Claudia Gray, who is someone I like. She's written Star Wars books that are really good. She's a good person who, like, writes books for franchises.
Cool.
So I've got that, and, we'll see. Some of it's planned, and some of it's just, like, you know, like a couple nights a week, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna watch something scary. Let's see what's on the streaming networks.
Yeah. You know, now that I totally forgot, one thing I do want to fit in is, so the Criterion channel, they actually have themes every month.
Yeah.
And two of the collections they have are high school horror The Jumping Vampires of China.
Yes.
So I sent you the trailer. So they basically made six movies in China, and five of them are a series, and one is a standalone about the hopping vampires, and that's like a thing.
Yes.
And I am so blown away by how bizarre that is. Because imagine something hopping at you, like, how is that scary? And I'm like, what alcoholic, went on a bender and woke up in like a barn and saw something moving and just like created the story of a hopping vampire,
Criterion channel, how much does that cost?
Oh god, I don't remember.
Is it used to be part of Max? When it was HBO Max, there was Criterion in it, and then when it became Max, it was gone. So now Criterion is alone.
Oh yeah, so it's $10.99 a month, or you could pay $100 for the year. So sometimes, and I do this with a lot of my streaming services, so I really have to like trim it down, is I'll forget about it for a couple months and then watch a bunch of stuff on it at once. And like I do that with Shudder every year. I pay for Shudder every year because I want to know I have Shudder. And then like around spooky season or even during the summer, I'll randomly watch like a bunch of horror movies.
Yeah, you get more use out of Shudder around that time.
Yeah, and then there was a brief time when I was really into that horror drag show. Dragula, and I was watching that for like a couple months. But yeah, so the Criterion channel, they always have different themes and they have really interesting work. The app itself isn't terrific. Like sometimes it's hard to like you have to know what you're looking for to find it, you know. But they have some just really great like. And like they'll have like another one called Euro Thrillers, and Diabolique is one of them, like stuff like that. And they have amazing commentary, and that's one thing I really miss from the brief shining moment of DVDs and Blu-ray. Yes. And so they have movies on there that they'll have the movie, but then they'll have a movie with the commentary, and so you'll watch the whole movie and you'll have commentary. They also have. Yeah, and that was awesome. They also have like a lot of guest speakers, so like they'll have guest speakers introducing a collection and like why it's important. They had this really great Grady Hendrix was doing. It was so interesting because I didn't even know that he was into this stuff. Like he was introducing like Hong Kong like police.
He wrote a nonfiction book, martial arts films.
Exactly. And I didn't realize he did that. And then I saw him and just seeing him in that commentary and talking about all these movies and how what he knows about it and just the enthusiasm was fascinating.
Yeah.
So I really like it for that. And they also have like series where they'll just talk to people. Like, they have this, it's called Adventures in Cinema, and they'll just sit with someone who works in film for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
A lot of it is actors, like watching Michael Cera talk about like different movies he would recommend actually made me respect him more as an artist in a weird way.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're so one note, but you don't realize that a lot of these actors, even the schlocky ones, are film nerds. So they'll talk about what they love about cinema, right? And there's something really great about watching nerds talk about nerdy things, you know?
Absolutely. And if you listen to this podcast, that's probably something you're into.
Yeah, Hopping Vampires. I really hope it's as hilarious as it looks.
I would make a recommendation to you, now that you've seen Friday the 13th, read Grady Hendrix's Final Girl Support Group.
Oh, yes.
That's a fun kind of horror comedy novel that basically it's like a support group with the final girl from every franchise. Although they don't use the franchise names, but it's very clear what franchises they are. I think you'd enjoy that.
That sounds great.
Well, everybody, this is PCMC. This is Halloween 2023. We're talking slashics, classic slasher movies. We do Halloween all month long, all October. It's the greatest time of year, if you ask us over here at PCMC. I was joined today by Nadia Necromancer Cater.
Nice.
Thank you so much for being here. We end every episode by saying,
oh, bye-bye.